When you look towards someone to serve as president of the United States, what ability or characteristic tops your list? How about the ability to lead? Leadership, of course, doesn't come with one set of rules, what you're to be the leader of, specific circumstances which come about, and even limitations of what's possible come into the leadership picture. However, I hope you will agree that leading in ways that create allies and results is the most productive way of leading. My next guest is a presidential historian who, with his most recent book, examines the leadership qualities of 8 U.S. presidents and the lessons that can be learned from them. His book is How the Best Did It, Leadership Lessons from Our Top Presidents. He's also a contributing columnist for the Dallas Morning News, Talmadge Boston. Thanks for being here today, Mr. Boston.
Chris, glad to be on your show.
TalmadgeBoston.com. Learn more about How the Best Did It and Mr. Boston's other writings, which are many and informative, as well as educational. But I guess the best place to start is, as a presidential historian, what was your reaction to the election results this past Tuesday?
Well, first of all, the polls made it seem like it was going to be going down the wire, and the margin of difference in the Electoral College would be less than 10 points. And so, in fact, the polls were wrong about the outcome, and that Trump obviously swept all of the swing states, and no one had predicted that. And that's, you know, the most surprising aspect of it. I think Trump now can accurately state to the American people that, in fact, he has a mandate. Biden, after he was elected in 2020 and upon becoming inaugurated in January of 2021, acted like he had a mandate, even though he won by an extraordinarily narrow margin. But we all know how that fell apart. So Trump, I don't see anybody could disagree with the fact that he has a mandate. We know that he will have a Republican Senate. I think we're still waiting to find out if he'll have a Republican House. So the bottom line in terms of results is major changes are in order and will be coming very early in the new year.
Or as you write about with leadership, it's easy to go out there and say what I want to do. But if you're absent of the how am I going to do it, then that could be a problem.
Well, obviously, it's a lot easier on the how if you have Congress behind you and you're not having to cross the aisle in order to get your legislation that you want passed across the goal line. So Trump is in a favorable position in terms of not having to deal with Congress that's going to be in conflict with what he wants to pursue. I think the Republican senators and House members are, for the most part, going to be on board with what Trump's priorities are. And so I expect many things to happen pretty quickly that will be at complete conflict with what the Biden-Harris administration did.
And certainly if a leader can have unanimity behind them, to some degree at least, because obviously it's a two-party system with a few independents sprinkled in the two chambers. But if you look, and again, as you write about and How the Best Did It, building from the outside was certainly an asset too, and maybe in even some cases with what we see as what will be the state of affairs politically, that maybe a President Trump might need a Democratic vote every once in a while.
I mean, it's certainly possible. There are some independent Republicans, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, Collins from Maine, Murkowski from Alaska, who from time to time do not go along with the Republican, their Republican colleagues. But it now appears that there may be 53 to 47 in the Senate. And so even if those two go against the Republicans, Trump's Republicans would still have the majority. So, again, so many things about American politics are unpredictable. And just as soon as you think you've got a handle on where things are and where they're likely to go, then something happens that makes you change your opinion. But for right now, it looks like Trump and the Republican and his Republican Congress are in the driver's seat.
When you look at a president of the United States, and maybe in your book, Thomas Jefferson might be one of the best examples. Mr. Boston writes about Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, both Roosevelts, Teddy and Franklin Delano, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, and Ronald Reagan. But if you look at Jefferson and the need to build at least a peaceful coexistence between sides, if not drawing in those against him, not that I think Donald Trump would be willing to learn from somebody else. He's more apt to tell somebody else. But if a President Trump wanted to have an open mind for a historical guide to leadership, what could he learn from Thomas Jefferson?
Well, most American presidents have operated under the assumption that it's good for us to be as unified as we can be and not to be as divided as we've been in recent years. And Trump, at least, gives lip service to saying he wants to unify, even though we know from his first term that he was not a unifier. He was more of a divider than a unifier. And I don't think Trump reads history. I don't think he knows history. He's an independent kind of thinking person. He does what he wants. Sometimes he shoots first and asks questions later. We're now seeing exactly who's going to be in his cabinet and the important people appointed in his administration. He's got his work cut out for him. Will they be positive agents for getting the right things done, or will they be mere sycophants and yes people? We're just going to have to wait and see on that. But he's definitely a force of his own, and he has obviously some very strong supporters, very few of whom are ever willing to challenge him, or else they will find themselves fired.
So with Thomas Boston, his book, How the Best Did It, Leadership Lessons from Our Top Presidents, ThomasBoston.com, the website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Does a leader, a productive leader, need to have a sense of humanity? I'm recalling your chapter about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Certainly when he was afflicted with polio, relatively on in his life, and I believe it was his early 30s, that humanized him to a great degree, that helped him overcome a lot that he had to confront during his term. What's the value of humanity in a leader?
Well, a leader obviously wants to feel a connection to the public sentiment, since he is in charge of leading the public. I think an argument can certainly be made successfully that as between the two candidates, given the turnout and what we know about who voted for whom, Trump did a better job of appealing to the great American middle, to the American labor force, to Latino, particularly Latino men. He attracted more African-American vote than in prior elections. And when you look at how the vote came out, it seems he's got his finger on the pulse of America with its extensive diversity, much more than Kamala Harris did.
When you look to, I remember a lot of people comparing the emotional aspect of the Harris campaign to the emotional side of how Reagan, especially in 1980, coming off of the Jimmy Carter years, what he was promoting, and again, I mentioned this in the previous segment, he was the creator of the Make America Great Again slogan that Trump has co-opted. But apparently, I guess, as you said, without a message, you can be as optimistic as you want. We get back to that. Okay, what is wonderful? Let's hear the hows now.
Well, Trump was certainly not great on specifying many of the hows in terms of how he plans to achieve his many goals. But I do think there is a strong comparison to be made between the very unsuccessful presidency of Jimmy Carter and why that allowed for the Reagan landslide, fueled in large part by Reagan Democrats, to wipe Carter out in the 1980 election. I think that's very similar to what's happened. The Biden presidency, with its disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, which sources in the Kremlin acknowledge was instrumental in Putin's decision to invade Ukraine with the extreme inflation and rise of the deficits brought on by excessive spending by Biden, and, of course, the unconscionable border security deficiencies that are unprecedented in American history, that these were big issues and should be big issues to the American people. And no matter how much Biden-Harris wanted to act like they had had a successful 4 years, in fact, they could not dupe the American people into thinking such was the case, given the rate of inflation, the border chaos, and all the instability in the world caused by Biden's perceived weakness as a foreign policy leader.
Last question to wrap up. Are we past the days where we would see a Lincoln pick an absolute opposite for vice president, or are the days of Ronald Reagan sitting down with Tip O'Neill and telling stories and jokes, are those days gone forever? Could we ever hope to get back to politics with that sort of spirit and feeling of unity from opposite sides once again?
Well, Lincoln picked Andrew Johnson for his second term because Johnson was the only member of the U.S. Senate who was from a southern state. He was from Tennessee, and part of Tennessee, in fact, had supported the Union effort during the war. And so Lincoln picked Johnson entirely because he thought it would be a great statement about the need for there to be reconciliation in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War. The Civil War was coming to a close as Lincoln's first term ended, and Appomattox came 1 month after Lincoln's inauguration for his second term. And at that inauguration, Lincoln realized immediately he'd made a horrible error in picking Johnson, who was an alcoholic and got drunk on Inauguration Day and was just, and is now rated as one of our five worst presidents by everybody. In terms of Reagan O'Neill, that's, you know, those were people working across the aisle. The House was Democratic when Reagan was president, so Reagan had to work across the aisle. And so people work across the aisle when they need to, when there's a divided government. And so surely there will be times in the future when we again have divided congressional houses as compared with who's in the White House, in which case you necessarily must work with people in the other party. But in terms of looking at historical comparisons, I mean, Jefferson, as our third president over his 8 years, got the Democrat, what was then called the Republican Party, which evolved into today's Democratic Party, dancing to his music throughout the country, which caused his 8 years to be followed by his best friend Madison's 8 years, and his then followed by his little brother figure Monroe's 8 years, and then there was a four-year window for Quincy Adams, but then another 8 years, Andrew Jackson, such that of the 36 first years in the 19th century, 32 of them were Thomas Jefferson and his proteges. And so who knows what the future holds in terms of 2028? Are we going to have another Republican president? You know, for that matter, 2026, the midterms. Are the Republicans going to stay in control of the Senate and potentially the House? We don't know, but it all depends on performance. It depends on whether the Democrats come up with a new approach that's going to better connect with the great American middle, since the approach they followed during the Biden-Harris administration was targeted in favor of the extreme left, and that's why they got blown out earlier this week. So there's a lot of things that will happen that will affect exactly which party is going to have how much power in the years ahead. But as for right now, the Republicans have a mandate, and if they act and have success in achieving goals on the economy, foreign policy, border control, then their support among the American people should just continue to grow.
As they say, history is there to be learned from, and it's just a matter of how well you are listening and comprehending. That's why Mr. Boston's book, How the Best Did It, Leadership Lessons from Our Top Presidents, not just great for if you're a history fanatic, if you're a business leader, if you're a community leader of an organization, if you're an educator, the leadership qualities of the eight presidents that Talmadge Boston spotlights in his book, those characteristics, those ideals can be incorporated into whatever it is you do to arrive at success and overcome challenges. TalmadgeBoston.com. Talmadge Boston, it's always a learning experience talking with you, and more so listening with you, because you present history and truth and facts as well as the wisdom it holds, and we appreciate that. And thanks for being here again.
Chris, it's an honor to be on your show, and hope you have a great weekend.